Hey there, Goblin here. I just wanted to give you a heads up that until recently, I've been uploading exclusively on YouTube. So head over there and check out my channel if you're interested in more content, as there are additional videos that don't get uploaded here as podcasts. Thanks for tuning in. Now, let's get started. Hello and welcome. I'm Goblin Queen, and we are going to be reading some first-hand paranormal experiences. These are all stories that take place, well, as the title says, on the road. This is a beloved location of mine for strange happenings. There is something about a dark, lonely road that is just very ideal for spookiness. Maybe that's coming from someone who grew up in a densely populated city, and one of my friends and I's favorite source of teenage excitement was simply to drive out to rural switchback roads and just cruise through the night. It was oddly thrilling and gave us a sense of creepy otherworldliness just to be in that setting. This is the second video I've made dedicated to the on-the-road or roadside sightings category. The first one was a video, and I decided to go audio only on this one because it was honestly just going to get really repetitive with just splicing together different B-roll footage of dark roads. Might as well just listen, maybe while you're on the road yourself. So these are all first-hand accounts I've collected from several sources. The first one is from Your Ghost Stories, and it was submitted by Mandy. It takes place in Tennessee, and it's called A Few Weird Creatures. The first experience I will describe today is the strangest thing I've ever seen in my life. I still don't know what it was, but this is what happened. My daughter and I were on the way to my parents' house on a Sunday afternoon in early October. It was approximately 7 or 8 years ago, but I remember every detail. All of my family lives within miles of each other in rural eastern Tennessee. So every Sunday, my mom cooks a huge dinner and we all show up to eat and spend the evening together. Anyway, as I round a sharp curve in the road, I immediately had to swerve to my left to avoid hitting something. It wasn't exactly in the road, but was sitting on the very edge of the asphalt, with its back turned to the road and its legs stretched out in front of it on someone's driveway. It never reacted to my car coming so near to it, so I thought someone had placed a dummy there to scare people. Remember, it was almost Halloween. I got a close look at it as I came to a near stop, and I saw it had on a shiny-looking black coat. Judging from the way its legs were positioned, it may have been 3 feet tall when standing. But for some reason, what sticks with me the most was its hair. It was very long and very similar to its coat in color and the shiny, almost oily black appearance of it. I thought to myself, okay, someone put a stuffed dummy in the road. Just drive around it and go on. I was doing just that when it turned around and looked at us. My daughter was in the front passenger seat, so she was closer to it than I was, but we both clearly saw it. Its face was like a black, wrinkled, rotten apple. And that is pretty much all I can say about its face, because I vacated the area in a hurry. When we arrived at my mom's and I began to tell what we had seen, my cousin interrupted halfway through and finished describing it. She lives about a mile from where we saw it, and just the night before had seen something short and black cross through her yard, heading for the woods behind her house. We never saw it again, but heard of a few local people who had spotted something similar in the area. I wish now I had stayed to observe it instead of driving away, so I hope I see it again someday. The next story I have concerns my partner and I. We live in a heavily wooded subdivision in our small town. He isn't a skeptic, but doesn't have as many experiences as I do. But he saw something one night on his way home from work. It was late, around 10 p.m., and as he pulled into our driveway, he saw something rush across our yard, directly underneath our automatic floodlights, and then disappear into the darkness of our backyard. He, of course, went to investigate, and found nothing, but he still swears he saw a monkey running on its hind legs. He was totally dumbfounded, but he knows what he saw, and still refuses to talk about it. One last short story. My aunt and I were driving after dark on a long straight stretch of road. We were just chatting away when something ran into the road in front of our car. The odd thing was that it didn't cross the road. It ran in front of the car in the middle of the road while we were still driving. And let me tell you, it was fast. She flicked on the high beams and I swear this thing looked like a Chihuahua dog, but bigger. It was of a light tan color from what we could see, but its head was enormous, way out of proportion with the body, and it had long ears like a rabbit. It was there and gone in a flash, but we no doubt saw a weird animal in the road that night. So that was technically a few stories to start us off. This person has a lot of bizarre roadside encounters. They did say they'd lived in a small rural town that's heavily wooded, so I suppose they probably get their fair share of dark, lonely roads. One detail from the last encounter or sighting that they had I thought was interesting was that it didn't run across the road. It was running down the middle of the road in front of their car. That's not something you hear about a lot. That's pretty creepy. I'm sure some could argue that the latter two stories simply contained some sort of malformed animal, a raccoon with mange, some sort of mutated possum or cat, but it's hard to say. It's nothing they could identify for sure. And there was something that they even acknowledge in the comments of this story that it could have been something like that. It just, they weren't sure, and whatever it was appeared very strange to them. My favorite was the first story they told, though, about the weird little creature sitting on the curb with its legs splayed out, covered in shiny black hair, with a face like a rotten apple. I can just picture it so clearly, and I love that description of the face, and that it was around Halloween. So, that was my favorite one of the bunch. The next story I found is from a 2011 Reddit thread titled, "What's that true story you have that nobody believes?" This response was posted by Llama Sonic. When I was a kid, around 1980, we were driving back from a weekend of boating at Lake Berryessa. We had come out of the windy road part, and we were driving through Napa on the way back home at night. I mention it because you can totally see the stars out there. Somewhere along the road, night became daylight, like a light switch was turned on. My dad pulled over just as you would when a cop pulls you over, and then we all got out of the car and stood alongside the road. Above us was a very large, round object with lights on it. It blocked out the entire night sky. There was no way of telling the size or how high up it was, but it blocked all the stars above a 30-degree angle or so. It hovered there about 30 seconds, made no sound, no air disturbance, but rotated very slowly. In an instant, it went from blocking the night sky to being the size of a quarter, up and to the right for a split second, then it shot off like a shooting star in reverse, literally scratching the night sky. Our gaze went from looking up to looking at each other, and then beyond each other to notice that more cars had pulled over, staggered out in front and behind us. They were also standing outside their cars. At that moment, we got scared. Not before, not during, but only when you saw that other people witnessed what we had just seen. Everyone gets in their car and drives off. My dad tells us not to talk about it. People won't believe you. Best to just forget it happened. Anyways, I'm not into UFOs, and if you told me the same story, I'd be a skeptic. That was a good story, a little different from the usual creatures and cryptids that we've usually seen as roadside sightings. Sounds like a UFO, right? Author Mike Cleland actually had a similar experience. He is famous for writing a series of books called The Messengers, where he collects people's stories of UFO encounters, abductions, and also owl sightings, and how the two seem to share a connection in a multitude of ways. Great books. And he also talks about his own UFO experiences, and he only says it briefly in his book, but I've heard him talk on a couple different podcasts, where when he was a young child, I think maybe like elementary school or middle school aged, he was out with some friends at night, and the sky went from being the night sky to bright orange, I believe. In not even just a flash, the way he describes it was that it seemed like it was just like a blink, like someone had flipped a switch. The sky was black or dark, and then blink, it was orange. and then it went back. So that reminded me of his story, especially the way that they described it as like a light switch was turned on. Next, I'm going to read a couple stories from the fairy census. And if you aren't familiar with the fairy census, I do have a few videos where I read other stories from it and kind of go into detail about what it is. But basically, it is a piece of academic folkloric research where people have submitted their firsthand fairy sightings from across the world. There's two of them now. These are going to be from the first fairy census that was released in 2018. This took place around August or September 1991 in Cornwall, UK, whilst driving down a country road with hedgerows on either side and traveling at a speed of around 45 to 50 miles per hour. Something compelled me to look into the hedgerow. I saw a brown, leathery-skinned, very angry-looking old man standing about 2.5 feet high, completely naked, apart from a loincloth-type clothing. He was pointing right at me with his index finger. What happened in an instant seemed to last forever. I then braked sharply, only to realize that the road was falling sharply towards a seawall. If I hadn't braked, I would have driven over the seawall and over the cliff face, as I was not on the road I thought I was. I had my then wife and baby son in the car with me. I consider this pixie to have saved our lives. The events of that night have and will stay with me forever. It did frighten me enough to not want to see another being like this. The author gives a little more detail about the being's appearance. About 2.5 feet tall with brown, leathery-type skin, an old-looking face with a hooked nose and large ears. He was bald or had very little hair. He had noticeably large hands. He also says that there was a definite silence to the surrounding air, which, of course, is a classic symptom of a supernatural experience. This reminded me of those Glitch in the Matrix stories, you know, that you read on Reddit or whatever, where someone's driving down the road and they see something weird or experience something weird that in the end they come to find has kept them from having some terrible accident. I can't remember anything specifically, but maybe you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, it reminded me of one of those, but with a fae twist. The next story that we're going to read also took place in Cornwall, sometime between 2010 and 2020. This sighting occurred between 9 p.m. and 12 a.m. I was driving through a village near Hale. There's a crossroad with some street lighting. It was a windy autumn night, little traffic on the road, and I was driving quite slowly. I became aware of movement coming towards me. People. Carts. I wasn't perceiving normally until I could focus on a very small horse, only a little larger than a Labrador dog. The horse was a pale sort of electric blue, and there was white in its mane. As it cantered past, it looked to its right, directly at me. I know that it was followed by other creatures, possibly humanoid, though something was stopping me from focusing properly. Something passed between me and the horse. It was as if the creature was reading my state of mind and attitude. Oddly, as I became aware of the horse, I was completely unafraid. Odder still, I was full of joy and not surprised by what I was seeing. Surprise came later when I reflected on what I had undoubtedly seen. I had previously had an interest in fairy lore, and when I was teaching in Wales, one of my intelligent sixth formers told me that several members of her family had seen Tylwyth Teg, as they are known in Welsh, near a mound in one of the fields of the family farm. The reason I mention this is to express that, at the time of seeing the fairy horse, I was, and remain, predisposed to believe, rather than doubt what I was seeing. I believed in the existence of other dimensions of reality, normally not perceivable by humans. And I believe that what we call fairies are non-malignant, dangerous only if treated with disrespect. That's a very unusual and interesting story. There is kind of a vagueness to it just because it deals with perception, and that's something that the person who had the experience can only really picture. But I still kind of got my own sense of what they were talking about or describing. It sounds like a case of the trooping fairies, or fairies that travel in a group. It's not uncommon, so they say, to see them on horseback in their processions. So some people think that in order to see something, as in really witness something, you have to see it in plain sight, in physical realm before you. But many people will argue that it's either extremely rare or completely impossible to see a fairy in this way, and that the way they are seen is much as how it is described in this story, as kind of an inward vision, or perhaps out of your periphery. They can't be seen outright and straight on. That's what some people say. Now, if you read the fairy census, you'll find that some people have witnessed fairies in all manner of ways. So I'm not saying any is more legitimate than the other. I just find the story to be really interesting. Surely you've seen something out of the corner of your eye, but upon going to look, nothing's there. But you were sure you saw something. The author reiterates that, "All I saw was the tiny horse and had the strong impression that there were fairies traveling with it, though I saw no detail." When it comes to filling out a submission to the fairy census, a variety of questions are posed, and one of these is location. In response to, in what setting did the fairy experience take place, you may choose from a variety of options, or write your own in. One of the options is on a country road. And I think fairy census curator Simon Young would want us to pose the question, is it the particular location of a country road that lends itself to more supernatural activity, or is it the psychological state we enter when we are upon the country road that causes these experiences? By the latter part, I don't mean to necessarily imply that the experiences had on country roads aren't real or are just tricks of the mind, but Simon Young believes that driving is one of those human acts we do that puts us in an autopilot state. It's something we don't have to really think about. It's second nature, and we can therefore enter a sort of meditative state, or as he calls it, a trance state. I mean, think about it. How often do you catch yourself daydreaming when driving, or just space out entirely and then suddenly you're home from work, not really processing much along the way because you can do so without thinking? This trance state could possibly allow us to be more receptive to supernatural events. Just something to ponder. I think we'll move on from the fairy census for now, but if it interests you, it is available to download online for free. I'll put a link to that in the description if I remember. Or if you Google fairy census, Simon Young should be able to find it, especially on his academia page. I also have two previous videos reading stories from it. Now, let's read a couple more stories from Reddit. These are both from the Humanoid Encounters subreddit. This next one we're going to read was submitted by RainyWeather123. Most skinwalker sightings occur in the US, but I have heard a few allegedly true stories of similar shape-shifting entities here in India. I have heard stories from my grandmother and my mother's grandfather about their encounters. Here I'll narrate my mother's grandpa's story. Let's call him John. It happened in the 50s, and in those days, the population of the area we live in was quite low, so adjacent villages were pretty far from each other, and the main mode of transport was horses. One evening after sunset, he was returning home on his horse on a very lonely road. There was nothing but farmland and trees on both sides as far as he could see. Suddenly in the distance, he saw a large white lamb or baby goat just standing in the middle of the road facing him. There were a lot of jackals in the area, so John took pity and decided to carry the lamb or goat home along with him. He approached it and picked it up and placed it on his horse such that the animal was in front of him on its side with its legs dangling across either side of the horse. It must have been about a half an hour after that, when it was getting a little dark, that John heard scratching noises coming from below. He looked and saw that the legs of the animal had seemingly grown so long that they were literally rubbing across the road as they were moving. He got so scared that he just threw it across the road and quickly ran away on his horse. But it didn't end there. When he was close to his home, but still not inside the village, he saw a disgusting-looking woman on the side of the road who started running alongside him. She was begging him to let her on the horse over and over again, but she ran away when human settlement came into view. John got a high fever after the incident and was on his bed for a few days. He is now very old, and he himself told me this story I think whatever he saw pretty much matches the qualities of a skinwalker. What do you guys think? Super interesting story. I love the bizarre detail of the goat's legs growing longer and longer until they dragged along the road. And I wonder if the woman he saw was related to that somehow. If she was able to keep up pace with a running horse, she had to have been going pretty fast. Creepy. As far as this being a skinwalker, it's my understanding that that is a term that particularly describes something existing within Native American culture, maybe even specifically Navajo. And it's also my understanding that it's not something you're really supposed to talk about. So, I'll leave it at that. You can do your own research if you haven't heard of them. Let's read a few comments left under this story. The first one, from R. Elephant, says, I heard a similar story of seeing a very large goat at nighttime from my grandmother. She told me she saw a huge goat, the same size as a water buffalo. She told me it's impossible for goats to grow to that size, staring at her when she was walking back home from the cornfield. She was accompanied by her dog on her way home. When she got nearer to the goat, the dog started to bark and chased the goat. The goat suddenly disappeared from sight. The dog was surprised and returned. My grandmother got very scared and started carrying a torchlight after that incident when traveling during the night. Now, you could argue that it's easy to mistake forms and shapes in the dark of night, but hey, I wasn't there. And regardless, I find both of these stories to be fun and interesting stories nonetheless. Traveling a lonely road at night is spooky enough without running into strange creatures. Another comment from Ill Examination says, There is a mysterious community called Odeon in my native place, Kerala, India. It is very similar to the skinwalkers. They go on to copy and paste an article from a news website called The Times of India that describes Odeon, a group of people who are trained in a form of black magic called Odi or Adi. I'm not exactly sure how you pronounce it. This article mentions getting much of its source material from a book called The Folklore Dictionary by Vishnu Narayanan Nambuthiri, an acclaimed poet, scholar, linguist, and priest. I wasn't able to read this book myself, unfortunately, because even though it is available to read for free on the Internet Archive, it's written in Malayalam. But according to this article and a Wikipedia page about the Odeon clan, the people who practice this art are able to take the forms of animals, such as bulls, buffaloes, jackals, snakes, foxes, or whatever they desire. There are some interesting social class elements to the practice of Odi, according to the article on the Times of India, and that it could not only be a survival response from oppressed classes, as well as a manifestation of the fear and tension felt between classes, but it also seems that both common and upper class people feared the Odian, who preyed on pregnant women, allegedly collecting fetuses for use as a magical ingredient. But it also says that people of all classes made use of the services of Odeon for what nefarious reasons, I can only imagine. Very interesting stuff. I will have my source list linked in the description of the video if you want to read this article for yourself. Now, let's read our next story. Location: near La Corlota, Cordoba, Spain. Date: middle of February 2006. Time: night. Rafael Diaz and Antonio Gomez Sanchez were traveling on a road towards Cordoba when they noticed they had a flat tire. They both exited the vehicle and, using the light of a cell phone, began walking towards the nearest mile marker in order to call a tow truck. Suddenly, they see, walking in the middle of the road, a man-like figure more than 6.5 feet in height, wearing a sort of tunic-like garment that covered its body completely. They were not able to distinguish any legs, arms, or neck, as the figure seemed to actually float right above the asphalt instead of walking. As the figure approached the two stunned witnesses, it stopped in front of them, remaining still and ignoring the witnesses' questions. The light of their cell phone seemed to melt into the figure's garment. One of the witnesses seemed to become paralyzed in front of the figure until his companion shook him into reality, and both then ran towards their vehicle, followed by the strange entity. They both entered the vehicle and drove with their flat tire to the nearest gas station. One of the witnesses suffered a nervous breakdown and remained locked in his house for a week after the encounter. So, this story was reposted to this Reddit or subreddit from what seems to be a Spanish website that gathered UFO stories called Lo Oculto. There was a link to the original page after the story, but the website is no longer functioning, so you catch a 404 when you click on it. I was only able to find very limited screen captures of the website's homepage on the Wayback Machine, unfortunately. It seems like it would have been a very cool website to look through, so that was kind of a bummer. Had some great 90s or early 2000s, I guess, pre-2010 internet page graphics, some nice spinning 3D text GIFs and things like that. Speaking of UFOs, this does read like one of the UFO reports I go over in my UFO radio series. Definitely some elements of high strangeness, and probably the last thing you expect to encounter when changing a flat tire. And while we're on the topic of UFOs, let's read a very interesting story from an old UFO Times magazine from early 1997. This story was, quote, experienced by a family from West Yorkshire who were living in Somerset at the time. It happened in the late summer of 1977. The names that occur in the story are pseudonyms. Kate Walker, her husband, and two young sons, aged 7 and 6 years old, were returning home to Chard from visiting relatives in Yeovil. They were approaching Wind Whistle Hill, which is 2 miles outside of Chard, and rather an isolated area. As they came to the top of the hill, Kate and her family all observed a huge orange light diffused by clouds to their left-hand side and at the far end of Wind Whistle Hill. It seemed to be right beside the road, not very high up, although this hill is very high. It was partially obscured by clouds, but they did not feel alarmed as there was a power station and pylons further along. However, as they drove nearer to the light, it was easier to observe, and Kate's state was massive and totally static and very low and bright. She describes it as being cigar-shaped and vast in size, maybe 200 to 300 feet. And she estimates the light to be approximately 800 to 1,000 feet above them. As they got closer, she noticed that the pub on the right-hand side of the road, the Wind Whistle Inn, was almost in total darkness, except for a light and a small upstairs window. Kate looked at her watch to check the time, as she felt it was strange the pub should be closed so early. The time was 10:10 p.m., and Kate looked up again at the light, which was almost on top of them by now, right beside the road. She felt very uneasy and told her husband to put his foot down. The next thing she was clearly aware of was seeing what she thought was a cyclist's headlamp coming the other way, which seemed to appear from nowhere and then disappear. They did not actually see a bicycle. Upon arriving home, Kate discovered, curiously, that it was now 10:50 p.m. Their journey from Wind Whistle Hill should have taken them only 10 minutes. They were extremely puzzled, but decided not to report it for fear of being thought of as cranks. A few days after this strange incident, Kate and her family were once again making the journey back to Chard, and as they were coming over the brow of the same hill, and about 200 to 300 yards from the first spot, they saw in front of them, on the left-hand verge, two people, one who appeared to be lying down and the other standing. Their initial thoughts were that someone had been injured and went to slow down, when to their astonishment, the person standing took one step out in front of them. One foot remained on the grass verge at the roadside, and the other foot was right over the center of the road. Kate describes the figure as being abnormally tall, with legs that were horrendously long and thin. Her husband swerved to the far side of the road and around the figure, and they kept on driving and did not look back. They all agreed that there was no one who could possibly have legs that long. Kate fully expected to hear something about this in the local paper, maybe someone being injured or taken ill on Wind Whistle Hill, but she never heard anything about an incident there at all. Kate has commented to me that it seems very odd in retrospect that they all took these events so calmly and just got on with their lives and never discussed it amongst themselves at all. This important report becomes more mysterious 18 years later, when Kate, remarried and now living in the north, and her sons, now aged 26 and 25 years old, were, intriguingly, finally discussing these events. her eldest son, Jeff's recollections, refute the fact that they had driven under the object. He can recall Kate telling his father to put his foot down, but says that as he did so, the engine died and the headlights went out. His father started to panic and tried to restart the car, but nothing happened. He goes on to say that at this point, things became very strange and everything was in slow motion. His father lunged across the front of the car to the passenger seat, and at the same time there was a very deep, humming vibration, slow and rhythmic. He could not remember his mother sitting in the passenger seat. He then remembers his father punching the dashboard repeatedly, but everything was still in slow motion with no sound. He felt frightened, and his younger brother Tony was looking out of the side window and seemed excited, but Jeff didn't know why, and his father was pointing and obviously shouting, but Jeff could not hear any sound, and somehow, things were different. He then realized his father was looking past him and out of the back window and was terrified. Tony was kneeling on the back seat, looking out of the rear window and pointing at something, saying, "Look, Jeff, look, Jeff." And although Jeff could now hear him speak, his lips and movements were again in slow motion. Jeff then realized that there was something behind the car and felt almost paralyzed by terror. He put his head down and covered his face, and then for some reason said he had no memory of Tony either, in the same way as he had no memory of his mother, Kate. He felt there was only himself and his father in the car. He could then see a white light through his fingers, so he looked up, and the light was everywhere, inside and outside of the car. It was a very bright white light, and he describes it as like being inside lightning, but it didn't hurt his eyes. His lasting memory is of seeing a dark shape outside the car, beside the window. He describes it as being very tall and bending toward the window looking in, and having the impression that the shape was mostly human, although he knew it wasn't, which was the reason he was so afraid. Jeff's next memory is of looking back at the orange light and seeing the headlamp coming towards them, only a few yards away. He then looked back and the orange light had gone. He explains that initially he only remembered seeing the orange light, the cigar shape, and hearing and feeling the hum and vibration. Through the years, fragmented memories of that night have returned, but as no one talked about it, he felt he shouldn't mention it. I would like to conclude this with Kate's comments in her letter to me, where she writes, "I find it incredible, thinking about it now, all these years later, that we could have dismissed it so casually at the time. We just never discussed it, and life went on as usual. It has been a great relief to tell someone." Now, that is indeed a strange and interesting story. Many details of what could be considered high strangeness. I imagine it would be extremely difficult to share that experience with people because of how unusual it is, and that you would be afraid that anyone you told the story to would write you off as crazy. But this family definitely experienced something out there on that lonely road near Wind Whistle Hill, and whatever it was is anybody's guess. Let's close out with a couple stories from the tried and true Your Ghost Stories, our favorite here on the old Goblin Queen channel. Well, it's my favorite anyway. This one took place in Texas, and it's called Monster at Lake Worth. One night, my best friend and I were taking a drive around Lake Worth, a lake near our house. We did that a lot, as we were very poor, and the unlit tree-encased roads were really fun and creepy to drive through at night. We always liked to drive around and try and scare ourselves. And besides, there was a decrepit old church and the castle to see out there anyway. This night, we were driving down the main road. It was dark, after midnight, and there were no other cars on the road. We took our normal route towards the castle, a building that resembles a castle, with trellised iron gates and stone towers, and turned onto the side street that curved around the lakeshore. The moment the headlights of the car lit upon the tight bundle of trees on the side of the road, I knew there was something there. I didn't really see anything so much as felt it there. I asked my friend if she saw anything there, but she said no, and I dropped it. I figure if she didn't see it, and really she's far more sensitive than I am, then it must have been the dark playing on my imagination. We drove to the castle, and I let the uneasiness slip from my mind. We left the castle the very same way we had come. And as we approached that copse of trees, another car was driving towards us, As the headlights from our car met and combined with the headlights of the other car, the entire forest was lit up as brightly as day. There was something there, visible between the tree trunks. Some strange creature, hunched and disfigured, loping away from the light as though it were being burned. It was huge, bigger than any deer or wild animal that could be found there, and moved on two legs like a human, but it wasn't human. Its eyes caught the shine of the headlights and reflected it back orange, the color of fire or traffic cones. The closest thing I can think of to compare it to is the creature Gollum from Lord of the Rings. Yet, it was very different also, more monster-like and muscled. It looked right at us, its creepy orange eyes snapping right on us. I couldn't help but think it could see us, could see how scared and shocked we were, though it was dark in the car and the headlights were blindingly bright. I felt a horrible chill stab through me. I could barely even breathe. My chest was tight and my throat was locked, and as I looked over at my friend, I could see tears pooling in her eyes. We didn't even pause at the stop sign at the end of the road as we sped back home. My friend thinks that what we saw that night might have been the Goat Man, a monster of legend from that area that comes out to frighten and terrorize people. But I believe it was a demon, because never before have I been so completely and utterly terrified. Okay, so I'm not the only one who got a thrill out of driving around dark back roads as a youth. It was a very well-told story. I felt like I could picture it all perfectly. It was very atmospheric. So, they mention the Goat Man, an established local legend that is also dubbed the Lake Worth Monster. It's even got its own Wikipedia page. There are a couple different variations on the physical description of the Lake Worth Monster, including one that claims it's scaly. There are a myriad of individual Goatman legends across the United States, with a heavy concentration of them scattered across the state of Texas. I dedicated a whole video to discussing Goatman and examining a few specific urban legends and just musing on the subject as a whole. I don't think I touched on the Lake Worth Monster in that video, but I do remember going over it and reading about it when I was doing my research, at the very least. At the beginning of the story, they also mentioned a building they would pass on their late-night drives that they called the Castle. Apparently, the Castle, also known as Lake Worth Castle, has a fair amount of local lore and infamy as well, not just the Goatman, but the castle. The Lake Worth Castle is also a well-known piece of local ghost lore. I found a page for it on hauntedplaces.org, a website that maps out haunted places across the world, mostly the US though. And on each location's individual page, they have photos and descriptions and, my favorite part, a comment section. And this is usually where people share their own experiences or their own tellings and understandings of the legends. So it's a very fun place to poke around, in my opinion. So Lake Worth Castle sits right on Heron Drive, a road that hugs Lake Worth and the road I imagine that they were driving on in the story we read. And it does indeed look like it would be very dark and spooky at night, with no street lamps, a vast pitch-black lake on one side, and an odd castle-like structure looming far back from the road at the end of a long drive behind a cast-iron gate. Alright, it's not really looming. It's not that big. It's only a two-story house. But it does have some castle-like towers and turrets packed together with rough stones. I can see why they call it the castle. It's a fun little building, especially for Texas, I'd imagine. Not too many castles here in America, so we gotta take whatever we can get that vaguely looks like a castle. It's exciting, okay? The best urban legends and local ghost lore are spread from person to person, right? So, let's hear the lore of Lake Worth Castle straight from the mouths, or fingers, of the people. This is a comment from John on the Haunted Places page. I've never been able to tour the castle, but when I first saw it one day driving by the area, I researched the property and found the story of the Lake Worth Castle. It has a fascinating, entertaining, and sordid history all at once. There are no records of its construction or original owner, but its construction began in 1860. Originally, the castle was known as Inverness Castle. Now it's simply called the Lake Worth Castle, and sometimes referred to as the Castle on Heron Bay. The original owner built the first wing for his soon-to-be bride. On the day of the wedding, the bride's dead body was found floating off the shore of Lake Worth. I'm sure there were suspicions, but it was never proved she was murdered. A month later, the man married the dead bride's sister. It's said you can see the ghost of the bride running across to the lakeshore and vanishing there, probably the same entity others have said they've seen in the windows. As time went on, the property changed hands several times, and the next ownership records it being owned by the Whiting family in 1920, after it was lost to them in a poker game. But soon, tragedy hit the Whiting family after they moved in. Their young son committed suicide in there. Then the place burned down to the point that all that remained were the stones. After that, the property changed numerous owners and fell into disrepair. Now, I'm not sure about that last part about it burning down to the point that all that remained were the stones, because I'm pretty sure it's still there, unless someone rebuilt it. Anyway, those are some great local legends, and it doesn't stop there. Another comment from Roxanne, who claims to have known the person who owned the property in the 90s, said there was a tunnel that, quote, runs from the castle's basement that goes under the front walk and street all the way to the lake and comes out on the side of a cliff. Apparently, there's also a large fountain with a life-sized Poseidon or some other mythological deity inside the castle's foyer. However, the building has come to be in a state of massive disrepair, covered with graffiti on the inside, and would be quite dangerous to explore if it wasn't heavily monitored by cameras and big barking dogs. So, if you are in the area, I probably wouldn't risk checking out the inside. But apparently, you don't need to. Plenty of people report seeing things from just driving by. Apparitions running in front of cars or peering down from windows of the house, or having your car break down in front of the house. Pretty fun stuff. I love local legends. Nothing like a spooky old abandoned house along a dark road. It's my bread and butter right there. I think Lake Worth Castle is the unsung hero of the last story we read. Really stole the spotlight. Now, let's close out with one last story. And it also took place in Texas. This story was submitted by Ulvin Nixie, and it's called Aimless Drive. My friends and I made a plan to go out to Possum Kingdom Lake State Park recently. It's a state park that is 2 hours away. It was a fun drive out, but the place wasn't all that great. In fact, it was fairly boring and buggy. Instead of trying to make it work there, we decided to go driving. We visited Breckenridge, Vernon, Burke Burnett, Warraga, and Ardmore. Basically, we went west, then north, hit Oklahoma for a couple hours, and went home. On the drive out to Possum Kingdom, we listened to songs that we could get off of the internet. At a certain point, we lost service and had to switch to the actual radio. We listened to the radio stations we already knew most of the day, but when we were heading north, we had to find new ones. We eventually settled on this station called The Bear. It was playing 80s and 90s music, mostly 90s. Occasionally, the DJ would tell us the weather. We were being followed by the bad weather all day, and we thought it was pretty funny. We liked the station, though. The guy had an awesome voice. We thought his way of speaking was interesting and kind of funny. And we knew we would continue to have it for a while, because it seemed like they were based on the border of Texas and Oklahoma. We settled into the station and the music while we were talking, joking, and all but swooning over anything remotely cute or pretty. The station had become part of the car's atmosphere. At one point, we all quieted as we were looking over some prairie land, drawing ever closer to the border of Texas. The skyway behind us was dark, but it hadn't yet started to flash with lightning. We were just admiring the view and enjoying the fact that we were out in the middle of nowhere. That's when the radio crackled, and a female voice said,
"You don't have to lock the doors. You never have to lock the doors."
We all caught it, and confirmed it with each other. It was weird, primarily because the bear was in mid-sentence. This other voice came out, and it was right back to the bear. We were willing to write it off as the station cutting out, though. I thought we would have to change it soon, but we didn't. We stayed on course for a long time. The radio didn't crackle again until we were much closer to Ardmore. It was crackled and swift. The lady spoke clearly, but she didn't sound like she was acting. It didn't sound like a commercial. I don't know why anything would tell us we didn't have to lock the door, but I can't shake the feeling that it was abnormal. Also, at the end of our trip, my best friend and I went into a restroom together. She said her neck was hurting and asked me to look at it. She had a really jagged and large scratch down her neck. She told me she had no idea where she could have gotten it from. We were in the car pretty much all day. Whether the scratch and the voice were related or not, it seemed pretty odd. We all heard it. We've played with a ghost box before, and it seemed a bit like that. It had the same sound, and that's the first time I've ever heard a radio break like that in all my years of road trips. I know it's a small experience, but for some reason, it feels significant. That story was simple and could probably be easily explained away or brushed off as interference from another radio station, but the author did say that, paranormal or not, it felt significant. And I think we can all relate to that. I think we all know that feeling that they're talking about. Also, that story just had a great atmosphere and a vibe to it that I really enjoyed. And like stories that take place on lonely roads, I also have a soft spot for stories that have a connection to radio. There's a handful of great horror movies about radio stations. The Fog, Pontypool, and pretty much every anthology TV show has a radio-themed episode. Tales from the Crypt's got one, Tales from the Dark Side, etc., etc. And this is a real radio station. Someone dropped the link to the bear in the comments of this story. It's an FM radio station, if anyone is curious. I was. I think we can all agree that AM is just creepier for some reason. And cooler. I mean, coast to coast, right? Well, thank you for going on the road with me tonight, drenched in the cozy mystery of a warm, dark night together. I hope you enjoyed the stories. Like I said, it's one of my favorite topics, and I've got plenty more to share, so part 3 incoming sometime in the future. I think we've all got our own spooky late night driving story, or maybe not even late night, weird paranormal, just off driving story that we've experienced too, right? So if you have one, please share it with me. I would love to hear it. And just remember, next time you're out on that midnight highway, keep your eyes on the road and not in the woods on the either side of you, or in the windows of that strange, dilapidated mansion, or on the strange lights in the sky. And always keep the doors locked. Good night.